organize work actions across industrial lines.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, November elections just around the corner. And as I've been saying, you know, it's about more than just ensuring that Donald Trump is not in the White House. It's about putting more Democrats, in my view, in the House, more Democrats in the Senate. I would love to see the Democrats take the Senate. Because, look, in order to move forward with a really visionary agenda, you're going to need the votes in both houses. You're going to need to have control of the entire apparatus to move a really solid progressive agenda. And that's why, you know, I think, you know, now's one of those moments where you start looking around and you're saying, you know, who's going to lead us into the next you know, decade? Who's going to lead us towards a better tomorrow? And for the last couple of days, we've been talking to candidates from around the country talking about their visions. What ideas do they have? Where would they like to take us as a country? And that's why we have partnered with No Dem Left Behind to look into the red areas of this country and start talking to those voters about, hey, how can we move forward? And that's why I've asked Steve Woodsmall to come talk with us. He's a congressional candidate in North Carolina's 11th congressional district. Steve, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to it.
I appreciate you taking some time for us. Your background, you're a retired military guy, right?
I am a retired Air Force officer and spent about 18 years in the Air Force. And since then, I've worked in the corporate world, worked in not-for-profit, taught college, and actually left my college teaching job a year ago. So to have a full year to run in this primary and try to turn this district blue.
So you're kind of a modern-day Renaissance man.
Well, I don't know about that.
But, you know, here's the thing, and the reason I bring up the military background is because I look at what's going on right now with Donald Trump in the White House, and especially the firing of Alexander Vindman. And anytime I talk to a military person, I got to get their thoughts on Vindman, not just Vindman, but Vindman's brother being fired and moved along because, you know, Vindman had the audacity to come forward and say what he knew.
Yeah, that's just absolutely unacceptable, and it just shows you how low we've gone in this country when we pardon criminals and we fire people for telling the truth under oath.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where I'm hoping, and this is where, you know, with your military background, I hope you have the pulse of what's going on with the folks in our military, because historically they have voted for Republicans. Yeah, and looking at this, do you think this changes that a little bit? Do you think that they're looking a little sideways at Trump's behavior here recently?
I think they are. I think I saw a study a few weeks ago where I think 52% of active duty people still claim to be Republican. I've been a Democrat my whole life. I was a Democrat the whole time I was in the military. I can't wrap my head around that, quite frankly. And I know maybe some people still want to support the Republican Party. I'm sure they can't be too impressed with what Trump has done. And I had this conversation with a military colleague just the other day. And I'm a little confused that more senior military officials, general officers, and senior ranking civilians haven't lined up at the door of the Pentagon and gone home over this and resigned over the fact that we have an incompetent commander-in-chief. I'm really concerned that they seem to be enabling that type of behavior.
Yeah, so, you know, with your military background, do you think we're at a moment right now where we have to limit the War Powers Act, if not just for Trump, but for all presidents?
Oh, absolutely. I think Congress needs to go back, not just in terms of war powers, but in terms of a lot of the other powers that they have under the Constitution. We've gradually let those erode over the years, and the War Powers Act being one of them, and not just for Trump. That has been going on for several decades now, where that particular authority of Congress to declare war, or at least be consulted with before military action is taken, has been eroded away. We definitely have to bring that back. Trump is a prime example of why, But that needs to hold true regardless of who's in Congress and who's in the White House.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Let's talk about your campaign, Steve, because, look, to me it comes down to issues. One of the big issues that you're talking about, you want to fight corruption in D.C., you want to raise the minimum wage, you want guaranteed quality health care, and you got to do something about the climate. Those are all great, great issues that I don't know how you can be against.
Well, I'll tell you how they're against them, and it goes back to my number one issue, and that is getting the big money out of politics. And I've said for a long time, we need to pass the amendment to overturn the Citizens United ruling and get this big, unlimited, dark money out of politics, because I have a PhD in management, and I'm a lot about root cause analysis when we talk about problem solving. And the root cause for all those issues you just mentioned and all the others that we talk about, the root cause that we can't get where we need to be on any of those is the influence of money on our electoral process and on our elected officials. And until we address that, we're never going to get where we need to be. Climate change is a great example. We subsidize the fossil fuel companies about $700 billion a year, which is more than we spend on education. And even Reagan, who was a Republican, said that we should subsidize things that we want to keep and tax the things that we don't want to keep, and we've clearly got it absolutely backwards, and that's why we can't get where we need to be on the other issues, is the influence of that money.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, and it isn't that hard to figure out, the corrosive effect of big money on our politics, and we're seeing it right now on the Democratic side of the ball as well, because you've now got Mike Bloomberg who's jumped in and is just spending money like it's water.
Yeah, I was listening a little bit of that before you called, and I'm a little bit disappointed in the tenor of that whole debate going on right now. But I just think we've got to take a look at what it all boils down to. Basically, as a former military person, I took an oath several times in the military, and that oath required us to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. That's very similar to the oath that senators and congressmen take. And it's about defending the Constitution of the United States. It's not about supporting the occupant of the White House or the big donors or the party leaders. It's about the Constitution. They've lost sight of that. And frankly, in military terms, they're derelict in their duty toward that oath. And that's why we're where we are. And I just hope that voters hold those people accountable, particularly the Republicans in the Senate. You mentioned earlier, we've got to flip the Senate. If we can get both houses in Congress and get a Democrat in the White House, we can turn this country around and make America think again. But God help us if that doesn't happen, because I'm really afraid of what can happen if we have another 4 years of Trump.
No, I'm right there with you. And look, another 2 years of Mark Meadows, the guy that you're running against in North Carolina's 11th. I look at Meadows as, one of these Tea Party congressmen who, during the Obama years was just screaming about debt and deficits and screaming about spending. I haven't heard a peep out of him since, Trump's been spending $1 trillion a year and adding to our debt. Haven't heard a peep.
Well, the Republicans, of course, allegedly are the deficit hawks, and here they are increasing the debt by $2.5 trillion, and they complain about welfare and entitlements, but they're all about corporate welfare, and so it's the hypocrisy that bothers me. But just you may not be aware, but Mark Meadows is not going to run again.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, we had the gerrymandering situation here in North Carolina. Due to a Supreme Court case that realigned the state General Assembly house districts.
Oops.
And so as a result of that, they've gone in, they went back in a few months ago, realigned the congressional districts. And when they did that, it cut District 11 from about an R-12 to around an R-6 or so. And Meadows announced, I think the day before filing deadline, that he was not going to run again. So the next day, 11 Republicans jumped in.
Oh, so this should be a really interesting election then.
Going to be an open seat, and we're going to win it. And I will just I'll just tell you, we're going to turn this district blue. I've heard most of the other Republicans at events we've done, and they're basically all Meadows clones. They all say basically the same thing, and it's the party line. They're pro-life, they're pro-gun, they're going to join the Freedom Caucus on day one. And they're not going to let America become a socialist country.
Yeah. So when you're out there talking with people and knocking on doors and shaking hands and kissing babies and all that, what are people telling you? Because, look, you know, when you start talking about healthcare, you start talking about jobs, you know, it's one thing to throw platitudes. It's another thing of, you know, how are folks doing in your district and what kind of responses are they giving you?
Well, they haven't been represented for 8 years, and that's the problem. We have the biggest block of voters in this district is actually unaffiliated. And, of course, Meadows never showed up here. He never represented the interest of this district. You can look at his voting record, and it's almost the exact opposite for his whole service in terms of what's in the best interest of the people here. And that's what I'm hearing. We need somebody that's going to show up. We need somebody that's going to listen to us. And we need somebody that's going to actually represent what's in the best interest of Western North Carolina and not the Freedom Caucus and not the guy in the White House. And that's why I think we're going to flip it this time, because they've seen 8 years of having a Republican in Congress and a Republican in the White House. And I think people are ready for a change, and they want to vote for someone that is really going to understand where they're coming from and what their issues are, and will actually take that to Washington and represent them.
Yeah, and for me, it always comes back to the economy, stupid. You know, and two of the things that you're talking about and wanting to move on in your campaign is raising the minimum wage and guaranteeing quality health care for folks. And I know those are big topics. You know, where would you like to see the federal minimum wage?
Most of the studies show somewhere around $15, $16 an hour. I know in Western North Carolina, it's around $15.86. I don't know. I think we should have a federal minimum wage, but I think we've got to take into consideration, you know, regional cost of living, that sort of thing. So that should probably be adjusted on a regional level based on cost of living and other factors. But I think I read the other day that if the minimum wage had kept up with inflation, it'd be around $33 an hour right now in the country. So it's not nearly where it needs to be. And, of course, the Republican response is, well, if you want to make more money, just work harder and get an education, and then you can do well. But, you know, people are not making enough money to go to college, and the people that are working are working three jobs to make enough money to raise their family. They don't have time to go to school. They can't afford to go to school, and they don't have health care.
Yeah, and on the health care front, Steve, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people all over the place. I'm curious where you find yourself. Are you on the, hey, let's strengthen the ACA side? Hey, add a public option, Medicare for all? Where does Steve Wood Small find himself?
It's no question. It's universal single-payer health care. Period. I've done a lot of personal research on this and talked to a lot of people in the medical community, and even they come down pretty much in that same area. Now, a couple of the people, even on the Democratic side in this primary, support the public option. That won't work for a couple of reasons. Number one, it does not take out the profit motive from healthcare. So you're still going to have insurance companies and medical device companies and drug companies and hospitals in it for the money. Therein lies the root of the problem. So we've got to go all the way with universal single-payer health care, because then we'll have, A, the ability to negotiate for drug prices, which Medicare cannot do now, as you probably know. And number two, we'll have everybody doing one set of administrative paperwork for every case instead of having to deal with 15 or 20 or 30 different insurance companies. The other thing that people don't think about is if you have the dual track, or some people call it the hybrid approach, where you've got the public option for people who want it, those private insurance companies are going to be very selective in terms of who they accept as customers, and they're not going to accept the high-risk, high-cost patients.
Right.
And those are going to be dumped onto the government system, which is going to overload the government system, because they're still in it to make money.
Exactly.
And so, to me, you know you have a problem. You know it needs to be fixed. Let's not take a halfway approach. Let's just wipe the slate clean. Let's fix the problem. Go to universal single-payer health care. The big argument comes from people, for example, like union members who negotiated for very good health coverage, and they want to keep it, and I understand that. However, what they fail to realize is if those companies don't have to pay for those Cadillac health care programs for the union workers, they can actually afford to pay people more money. So you're going to make more money, and you're going to get free health care. Everybody wins.
Yeah, I see, Steve, I'm one of those union members that says I'll be happy to go for Medicare for all.
Absolutely.
Because I got a little green contract book that says exactly how much I pay per hour for health care. And that money would go into my pension instead of healthcare. So I'm perfectly okay with it going to a national system.
Yeah, good to hear.
And that's where I think a lot of this divide is kind of manufactured, where you get a couple of folks who are making a stink. But for the most part, I think union members, if we can get the same kind of health care that we've got and expand it to everybody so that everybody gets the kind of insurance that we get and the kind of care that we get, I don't know who would be against it.
Well, the people that are making money are against it.
Of course.
And that's the problem. But, you know, I tell people a lot that the universal health care is such a complicated issue that only 32 of the top 33 countries in the world have been able to make it work. and we're number 33.
Right.
The other thing that a lot of people don't think of, and this comes up a lot at events that I do, and that is if people had health care and didn't have to depend on a job for their health care, look at the flexibility that would give people, to go from job to job if they didn't like the job they were doing, or they could go make more money somewhere else. And look how much more opportunities we'd have for people to go out and start their own small businesses or do something they're good at and they love to do or something that they can go out and manufacture that might change the world because they're not tied to that job because they need that job for the health care. They could go off and pursue something else because they don't have to worry about having that job because they need the insurance.
Yeah, well, that's the exact reason I went back to work full time while I do this because family needed the insurance. And
absolutely,
the union job that I've got has the best insurance you can get. I would
absolutely
love to see a system that's like that. The other argument that I make, and maybe you've picked up on as well, is the idea of having a cradle-to-grave system that ensures that you're well your whole life and not just, hey, let's get you through the next year to where maybe we can dump you off onto a different insurance company. Maybe that's probably a better system as well, because the idea of not just treating your illnesses, but keeping you well is kind of an incentive.
Well, and that's critical because, you know, one of the arguments against universal health care is that we can't afford it. And what people fail to understand is we're paying for it anyway. And you talk about overall wellness, and that's critical because if we had universal health care, people didn't have to worry about paying for a doctor visit or paying for their medications. They would go to the doctor when they needed to. And so you wouldn't have a situation in which maybe somebody gets a cold and they just deal with it for a couple of weeks and then pretty soon it develops into pneumonia. Now they have to go to the emergency room and it's going to be, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 for an emergency room visit. They can't pay it and the system's going to pay it anyway.
Yep.
So why not have a system that keeps people healthy and does a lot of, and people can take advantage of the annual checkups and all the preventative things, we would raise the overall wellness of the whole country.
Yeah, and then the other thing
that is not a bad thing.
No, it's a good thing. And people say we can't afford to do it. I say we can't afford not to.
The other thing
I like to throw out is maybe if we had a national healthcare system, maybe then we would start talking about all of the things that are making us sick. Maybe we would start talking about the air and the water and what's in our food and maybe having a conversation around that as well. Just kind of a thought to throw out. So last line of questioning I've got for you, Steve, because, you know, I ask every candidate, you know, two questions. You know, one, why are you going to put yourself and your family through all this? And two, what's the issue that Steve Wood Small dies on? What's the most important issue to Steve?
Well, I'm doing this because somebody has to do it, and we have to win this thing. And I feel like I'm in the best position to actually win this thing against whatever Republican they throw at us in November. We have six kids. We have eight grandkids and another one on the way. And I'm really concerned about their future. I have to be able to look at my kids and grandkids and say, you know, I know things were messed up, but I stepped up, tried to do something about it, and we've got things turned around. I don't want to be the first generation to leave my kids a worse planet than I was left. We've got to leave it better than we found it. We've got to have leadership in D.C. to do that. And I'm committed to doing the right thing and not the political thing. And if that results in me doing one term and they vote me out, then so be it. But I'm going to go down in flames doing it the right way. And I think we need people that are more concerned about doing the job in D.C. than they are about keeping the job. So that's why I'm running.
Excellent point.
Again, my number one issue, really, again, obviously the climate is probably the number one issue we face, and that's even a national security issue now. But I still believe immediately we've got to to pass measures to get this influence of money out of politics, because regardless of what other factors come into play, if we don't get the money out, we're not going to get to where we need to be on any of these other issues. It's the root cause of the whole problem. It goes back to Hamilton and Adams. They all said that wealth inequality was going to be one of the greatest dangers to democracy. We're proving that it is. And even the Democrats are talking about billionaires running as Democrats and what that's going to do. And, I mean, just fundamentally, that's the critical issue for me, is getting this big money out of politics and getting back to free and fair election systems and election reform and campaign finance reform.
Do you support publicly financed elections?
I do. I think if we went to that and everybody had the same amount of money and it was limited, then they'd have to run on the issues, and people would vote for their representatives, and the representatives don't get to pick their voters.
Yeah, that's a good point. And one of the things that Andrew Yang came out with, you know, I liked his idea of some universal basic income as automation comes online. But I also liked his idea that he had for democracy dollars, to where, you know, you would have public money that people could donate to the candidates that they thought were in their best interest, like $100 or something. And it would really have a, I think it would not be a bad idea, and something worth discussing.
Yeah, maybe, but I think the fundamental flaw in the Supreme Court ruling is the fact that money equals speech.
Right.
You know, we have the First Amendment freedom of speech, and they're saying that the amount of money you spend on a candidate equals speech, and I just think that's fundamentally wrong, and that goes against the whole concept they were going toward when they talked about freedom of speech. It's not about money; it's about what you can say, and not get in trouble. It's not about how much money you can throw at somebody so they'll vote your way.
And we'll see how this works out here in this election. But, Steve, I appreciate you taking some time. I hope you'll come back and talk with us again as this continues. Good stuff. Thanks.
Thank you. It's been an honor. And to call me anytime, I'll be happy to talk to you.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Steve Woodsmull. He's a congressional candidate there in North Carolina's 11th congressional district. Make sure you check out his website, woodsmull4nc.com. We'll get links out at how you can take a look at his website and the issues that he is pushing forth. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1997. And if you had the...